This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And good morning. This is the sous chef of The Garden Show, Frank Proctor. Nice to have you tuning our way. And I say our way. I better include the gal who's responsible for all of this stuff. And that would be Charlie Dobbin on the phone line from Prince Edward County, where I hope it's as beautiful a morning there as it is here in Toronto, Charlie.
Not to mention the first day of spring. Absolutely. Yay!
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Everybody's so darn excited and anxious to get to the warmer weather. In fact, I just had Jeremy in our newsroom print out a copy of the weather forecast for us. And by gosh, you know, today and tomorrow are going to be nice and sunny and warm. 14 degrees today.
Shorts, getting out my shorts.
Yeah, that's right. My gosh. Well, look, let me get the phone numbers taken care of because we want folks to call in with their questions. In Toronto, call 416-360-0740. Anywhere in the province, toll free at 1-866-740-4740. Our little mantra is, of course, call early, call often. One question per call. If you happen to be a first-time caller, let Carlos, our operator, know. He'll pass the word along to me, and then just before you get to the air, you'll get your garden wings. There you go.
And you get some exercise.
Exactly. Well, we've got quite a show lined up for a special guest coming along a little bit later on.
Yeah, a guest who's been with us in the past. Her name is Nikki Jabour. Mm-hmm. She's joining us from Halifax in about half an hour.
Ah, that's great. We'll find out what the weather's like on the East Coast as well. And I guess, well, how about the farm, right? Oh, not farm. Your country property, the estate.
Oh, yeah. My farm.
How's it going?
You know what? It's coming, right? Mm-hmm. Things are slowly waking up. It's been slow. It's been very cold and windy here. The wind is going to be my killer. I've never, ever gardened in such wide open windy location. So this is probably going to be my biggest learning curve, is figuring out how to grow things in so much wind. But yeah, the bulbs are starting to pop out of the ground. Little crocuses are showing their little noses.
Yep.
And you know, slowly, usually you would expect to have seen them, you know, weeks ago, but it's just been so windy here. But I've seen some great birds. I saw a heron the other day. I've had some woodpeckers at my cedars, which is very exciting. Saw some cardinals, saw bluebirds. I mean, this is really great because it's been very slow kind of bringing the birds back to the land. So it's happening.
Well, it's kind of funny. We've got two Canada geese who have adopted the front lawn. Just outside the sliding doors. And I thought they were going to come up on the deck. But these guys, I think they're lovers. And they've taken off from the flock and are on a little bit of a honeymoon. I don't know what the deal is. But it's so funny. They seem to be all alone, as it were. The flocks that fly over, got a 15-20, you know, at a time. But these guys, they're completely divorced from that. Unbelievable.
Well,
anyway.
That's cool. I think it's kind of sweet that they've moved into your honeymoon cottage to have their own honeymoon.
That's right. Well, look, we better take a bit of a break, Charlie, and get a word or two from our sponsors and then come back because we have folks on the line waiting to chat with you, okay?
Sounds good.
All righty, back in just a moment. The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin on Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, I hope you're all prepared here for a lot of advice-giving stuff. We've got a call-in from Judy, calling in from Stratford, as a matter of fact. Good morning, Judy. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I need some help. I'm trying to grow some peppers from seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the seeds from our peppers last year, and we dried them, put them down in our cold room for the winter. Mm-hmm. And we went and bought soil at the greenhouse that they start their stuff in. I've got it in one of those heated propagators with the mats.
Wow.
And we planted 50 seeds, and we got 10. We tried again. We got none. And they were those jumbo peppers, red peppers, and green peppers. What am I doing wrong?
So you're not getting any germination at all.
The first time we planted 50 seeds, we got 10.
And
after that, we've got nothing.
Huh.
And these are all saved from last year, from your seeds from last year.
Yes, we got some of our peppers.
So the thing about seeds and growing seeds, like saving seeds, is that depending on what variety of peppers you grew last year, they might have been a cultivar or a hybrid, depending on, again, on the, if you, I'm not sure if you saved the name or the tag or anything.
No.
But they often will not breed true, so meaning you will not get seeds to grow to be the exact same plants as the parents.
Right.
It's only open-pollinated and non-selected, usually, peppers where you can get that to happen. So I would be inclined to definitely grow on what you've got growing. I mean, peppers are like so many seeds. As you know, they need that humidity. They need heat. It always speeds things up. A good seed starting mix. Sterile conditions, so everything's got to be clean, washed if it's been if you're reusing anything, and of course the seed pepper seeds go just below the surface of the soil, and we mist them to moisten them, and then put a hood or plastic over top to hold in that humidity. But otherwise, it's just going to come down to the viability of the seeds. So I'd be inclined. Did you want to grow a lot of pepper plants this year? Like
probably 10 or 20? About
20. Yeah. So if I were you, don't hesitate to purchase a brand new package of peppers,
okay.
Or maybe you have the Stratford's got some great gardeners. You probably have some seedy Saturday event or seedy Sunday event, unless it's maybe already happened, to do some seed swapping. And you might be able to get a hold of some great seeds there from somebody else, another gardener. But, I'd be inclined to, buy some fresh ones.
Okay. So are some seeds sterile? I heard you talking about seeds that were sterile. Was it last week? Could some of these be sterile that they won't grow, or is it just they're not good? Is there some way you can tell?
No. No, but excuse me, one of the things people will do is they'll do like a germination test,
mm-hmm.
and they'll just do that in between two moist pieces of paper towel,
okay.
and lay, usually we'll go like 5 seeds or 10 seeds, put them on moist paper towel, just right on the kitchen counter. Maybe on a plate on the bottom and then another plate over top just to keep the moisture in, and then check on them. And what you do is you do your quick research, which of course I don't have at the tips of my fingers, on how many days it typically takes to germinate pepper seeds.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually 7 to 10 days with annual seeds like peppers. And then, after 10, 12 days, you count how many have actually germinated inside that paper towel. If you've got zero at that point, then you say, well, these are bum seeds, really.
Okay. I brought my fantasy in last week, like you said, and it's flowering beautifully. Thank you.
Oh, good stuff. Well, I was going to say, stay tuned, because Nikki Jabour is joining us in a little while, and she is a vegetable specialist. She grows so many vegetables. She might have a tip for you on what's going on with those pepper seeds.
Okay, we listened to the whole show. Thank you so much for your help.
Thanks, Judy.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, speaking of folks who listen, have a nice note here from Christy Cowell, who says, "Hi, Charlie. My husband Larry and I enjoy listening to you and Frank every week. Always pick up some interesting facts. Our question is regarding the transplanting of a skinny red maple tree. It was in my mother's backyard, and she wouldn't let us touch the tree, but now our daughter and her family live there. They want to move it away from a fence. The tree grew in the spot from a magic seed and is really started to take hold. The problem is the new neighbors in the back have put up a new wood fence, and this tree's trunk is about 6 to 8 inches away from the fence. The trunk, this sounds like a pretty sizable tree, is about 4 inches wide, and the tree is about 8 feet tall. We want to move this tree forward a few feet away from the fence. We really do want it to give it a growing area, but how to transplant this beautiful tree? How wide to dig, how deep to dig, et cetera. And she says, by the way, the soil is like clay. So.
Yeah. That makes hard digging when it's like clay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It does sound like a sizable tree, and it has obviously been there for a while. The trunk is about 4 inches wide. And if a new fence went in, you know what happens when we start doing construction around plants? We end up doing damage to the roots of things like trees, because the roots always go further than we think. And then there's all that compaction when people are, you know, walking and digging and piling soil all over the place. So I'd be fairly aware of the fact that moving a tree that's been subjected to that kind of activity might be more stressful than the tree can survive. But if you really want to move it, and I don't blame you, it'd be nice to get it a little further from the fence. Always in the case of transplanting, and of course, transplanting in the spring is fine. Transplanting in the fall is, in some cases, almost better, late summer. But you're going to pre-dig the hole you're moving into. So if it's clay, you're going to get out your pickaxe and make sure the soil is nice and moist. Pre-dig a hole so that the hole, of course, you're going to lift as big a root ball as you can possibly manage when you're moving this tree. So it's going to be a minimum of 2 feet across and 12, 16, 18 inches deep. So it's going to be a sizable ball that you are going to attempt to lift. So you're going to prepare the hole, you know, the new hole of a size such as that. You are going to mix in the existing clay if it's a poor soil with some quality soil. There's arguments either way on just using existing soil, but if it's a real clay soil, get some compost, get some organic material in there, lighten up that clay a bit. Make sure the tree is well watered. Dig as big a root ball as you can possibly lift. And when you lift it, have multi people there so that when it's being lifted, the soil and the roots stay together. Sometimes I'll use an old piece of burlap or sheet or something like that, and I'll actually literally wrap that fabric around the root ball so that when you do the move, the soil does not fall away from the roots, because that's your killer. If the roots are exposed and the soil falls away, there's so much root damage that it just won't work. So keeping that root ball as intact as possible, get it into that new location, plant it a little bit high because you know it's going to sink and settle. And of course, ultimately, you want it to be at the same level that it was growing. You're going to water thoroughly. Do not fertilize the first year. Stake it. If there's a lot of wind there, help it get stabilized for the first season, and consider fertilizing the following year. But stick with your, if you want to put some bone meal in as part of the move, but stick with some good quality organic material and don't do any kind of fancy fertilizing for at least the first year.
Okay. You know, I'm looking at our clock here, and we are expecting our chat with Nikki Jaipur from Halifax. So let's take a little commercial break here. That will allow Carlos, our operator, to contact Nikki and get her all lined up to have a chat with you and myself. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we'll be back in just a couple of moments here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie, I'm going to ask Connie and Helen, who are waiting online, to have a question shot to you, to hang tight. We'll be back to you. But we do have from Halifax right now, Nikki Jaipur online. Good morning, Nikki.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thank you for having me.
Hey, how's things in Halifax?
You know what? We got a dump of snow yesterday on the last day of winter. Talk about going out with a bang. We got 20 centimeters, although the next week, I know, the next week looks amazing, so I hope it all melts, but you know what? What are you going to do?
Well, and you know what? It's interesting because it's so clear and sunny here. You're going to get our weather, I guess, in a couple of days.
Yeah, I hope so, because I'm ready for spring, Charlie. Let me tell you.
But you've been growing year-round.
I do. I've been growing year-round for probably around 20 years or so. So, again, I'm just in Halifax, Nova Scotia. I don't have any heated structures, but I use things like I have a polytunnel. I use cold frames. I make these miniature greenhouses I call mini hoop tunnels over some of my raised garden beds. So, yeah, I even deep mulch things like carrots and parsnips and beets, so we harvest all winter long. There's quite a bounty you can enjoy, even when it's snowy outside.
I know. I've seen some of your posts on Instagram. It's amazing what you're harvesting and the depths of winter out there in Halifax.
Thank you. You know, it's a lot of fun, and I love the fact that I can, you know, still harvest vegetables when it's freezing cold. It's fantastic, and of course, it saves us money on our grocery bills, which is always awesome.
You know, I remember, Nikki, when you visited us during Canada Blooms, a couple of seasons ago. I know, of course, that you are an author of several books, but you've got a new one out now called Growing Undercover. Can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, I missed you guys. I really miss Canada Blooms. I'm really hoping next year we can all do this again in person. Fingers crossed. But yeah, Growing Undercover just came out a couple months ago. And it basically talks about all of the sneaky ways that I managed to grow more food. And, you know, not just extend the season into winter or plant earlier in spring, which I do, but also protect from pests like cabbage worms and cucumber beetles and deer, which I deal with on a daily basis. And even using a lot of these covers, they create microclimates around your vegetables, so you'll get a bigger bounty from those crops. So I like to think of them as garden insurance. So this book focuses on all the things and all the different ways I do that and all the different covers you can use in your gardens.
And it's well, very beautifully photographed. It's, you know, really well explained. So good on you. I think that this is a book anybody could learn stuff from, including me.
I don't know about that, Charlie, but thank you very much. Yeah, we had a Halifax-based photographer. In the past, my publisher has sent photographers up here from, like, New York and from, you know, Alabama to do photographs in my garden. But, you know, finally we've got a local photographer, and he is fantastic. I couldn't have been happier with the job they did.
Okay, yeah, because it's year-round photography. Like, you know, you're working away doing things in every season in this book. Hey, okay, so cucumber beetles are something that a lot of people struggle with here in Ontario. So, you know, everything looks good, and then the crop just completely, you know, dies on the vine mid to late summer. And certainly, I imagine you're using row covers early in the season to keep the beetles from infesting the crop with any kind of diseases, which is ultimately what really kills the plants. But knowing that they're insect-pollinated plants, how do you work that out?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, that's something I talk about because I've been giving lots of talks on growing undercover, and I mention this specifically because so many of us battle these issues. So cucumber beetles and even, like, potato bugs, you know, or squash bugs, this all applies to them as well. So if you're growing something, yeah, I do use row covers early in the season. So as soon as I transplant, you know, and I make sure to crop rotate as well because I don't want, you know, to plant my cucumbers in the same place from year to year. But then as soon as I transplant or sow my seeds, I use a lightweight row cover or an insect barrier fabric over top. And then they will grow probably for about 30 or 40 days until they're a decent size. And as soon as I start to see flowers that are ready to open, I take those covers off. And by that point, generally the plants are large enough that they're, you know, large and healthy enough to withstand a slight infestation. But honestly, more often, those cucumber beetles emerged in late spring, didn't find anything to eat, and headed off to my neighbors. Sorry, guys, but that's usually what happens.
We like that.
Right?
Move on. So timing is everything. Row covers early in the season until the plants are flowering. Stay on top of that, of course, and then get them uncovered so that pollination can take place.
Yeah, but if you're growing something like cabbage or broccoli for cabbage worm prevention and using a row cover, they don't need to be pollinated.
Right.
You can leave those covers on until you harvest. So, you know, in some ways, this can be very low maintenance. And you can lay them directly on top of the crops, or you can float them on hoops to make it look a little tidier.
Yeah, no kidding. Go ahead, Frank.
So I was just going to say, Nikki, that Charlie and I were discussing your work before coming on the air, and she was telling me about some of the plants that you deal with are not normally, available in Canada, or one would not think of them normally. You deal with plants from other countries, and I'm wondering if you might address that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that was the topic of my third book, Veggie Garden Remix, which just kind of, I think, celebrated so many of the different kinds of edible plants, like vegetables and herbs, we grow now in Canada, but, you know, traditionally weren't grown here. You know, a lot of them were brought in by our immigrant populations, and my husband, you know, grew up in Lebanon, was born in Lebanon before he came to Canada, and so that, you know, I kind of started on that road by wanting to grow vegetables for, you know, his parents and his family, things they would recognize, but you don't often see in Canada, whether at the seed companies or in the grocery stores. So that kind of got me started there, and then I started growing Japanese vegetables and Indian vegetables and Mexican vegetables and so many wonderful vegetables that you know, grew in my garden. But sometimes, of course, we needed a slightly longer season, and that's where I was able to use garden covers, like row covers, like mini hoop tunnels, to protect them and give them a little bit of extra heat so I could enjoy that harvest.
You're a United Nations grower. That's what you are.
It sounds like Nikki's next book probably should be a recipe book for how to work with these, international vegetables and great recipes for making them tasty.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite things to grow, and I'm looking at them right now under my grow lights, is za'atar, which is a Lebanese herb spice mix, and you kind of spread it on a dough that's, like a pizza dough, and you bake it in the oven. So it's like a flatbread covered in this sort of Syrian oregano, sesame seeds, sumac mixture, and it is the best breakfast you'll ever eat. And, I'm looking at it right now. My kids are like, when are we going to be able to eat that again? And I'm like, you got to give me a couple months. I'm sorry.
It's got to grow still. All right, my mouth is watering. So good. So you mentioned deep mulching some of the vegetables. Okay, when you deep mulch, say, carrots or rutabagas, a root crop, would that be a crop that's in one of your poly tunnels or poly houses and then deep mulched under that, and then you can go in January, February, nothing is frozen solid?
Yeah, well, you can totally do that. In my poly tunnel right now, I have deep mulched artichokes because they're not hardy in Nova Scotia, so I deep mulch them for winter, and then those roots overwinter, and I get an extra early crop of artichokes. But you don't have to. I mean, if you have a garden bed in your, outdoor garden, raised bed, in-ground, doesn't matter. If you have carrots or, turnips or beets or anything like that, at the end of the season, just deep mulch them with about a foot or a foot and a half of straw or shredded leaves, and then we harvest those all winter long. So you don't have to do that inside a greenhouse or polytunnel. You can just do it in your open garden and enjoy months of that crop when, again, traditionally in Canada, we're not harvesting carrots in January, but you can.
I guess depending on the kind of winter we have and the kind of location you have. Because, that wind, where I'm now gardening, because I moved about a year and a half ago from the GTA, the Toronto area, further east towards, I'm quite close to Belleville now, just south in Prince Edward County. So it's milder because I'm closer to the lake, but it is very flat and very, very windy. And also I have things like deer and coyote and foxes and all kinds of wonderful creatures I've never dealt with.
Yeah, and it's funny. I have deer and groundhogs and chipmunks and squirrels, although I don't have Ontario squirrels. I know they're extra scary. but I have bunnies. I have so many things. So, yeah, I do have a deer fence around my garden. My garden's at the top of a hill as well, so it's pretty exposed. And we get a lot of nor'easters on the East Coast and hurricanes. Mm-hmm. So I try to make everything I do strong enough to withstand, whatever Mother Nature's going to throw at it.
just a little note here for folks who might just have tuned in and they're saying, gee, who is this speaking and what is her book? It is Nikki Jabbour, and the last name is spelled J-A-B-B-O-U-R. The book is called Growing Undercover. Who's the publisher, Nikki?
Story Publishing in the U.S. They've been my publisher for all four of my books, and I got to tell you, they are a creative, incredible bunch of folks, and I love working with them because everything I write or do, they just make 10 times better.
Well, isn't that great? And so it's available at all fine bookstores, I would take it.
Absolutely. All bookstores across North America and beyond, as well as online, for sure. Yeah.
Good stuff. Oh, congratulations. That's true.
Thank you. Thank
and
you.
Yeah. For people that want to learn more about you, you don't actually have a website, but you are very active through savvygardening.com.
Yeah, that's my website, actually. I own that with Tara Nolan, who's in Dundas, Ontario, as well as an American writer. The three of us own it. It's much easier when you split the work between three people.
No kidding.
Because we have almost 2 million people a month visiting us now on SavvyGardening.com.
Wow.
And, and of course, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm everywhere, and I apologize for that.
Don't. And we know Tara. Frank, you remember Tara. She came to the studio. It was actually about a year ago. She was into the studio just before the big shutdown started, and she was rolling along with a broken foot or leg ankle because she'd had that accident.
Yeah, and she had a new book come out last March, so that's probably what she was talking about, gardening
exactly.
in the front yard. She's fantastic.
Exactly. That's why we had her on. And I just flashed on something I wanted to ask you. What was it?
Well, let me jump in with a little question on my mind. Being a non-gardener as I am, if you had to recommend, say, easy vegetables for a first-time gardener, what vegetables would you recommend that folks give a try to?
Well, I know you guys are aware of the fact that we are having a gardening boom in North America.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are just getting into it or coming back to it. And, you know, I certainly recommend sticking to easy-to-grow vegetables for the first couple seasons anyway. Things like bush beans and peas and cucumbers, zucchini, and cherry tomatoes. Those are all very easy to grow. And, you know, you can grow vegetables anywhere. I mean, you can have a garden bed. Raised beds, of course, are very popular now. But even containers or fabric containers you can buy at different garden supply stores. You can grow in buckets. Just make sure they have drainage holes. Drill some in there. But you can grow anywhere, whether you're on a balcony or whether you have a little piece of land. Just look for the sun. You know, 6+ hours is good. 8+ hours is great. And again, stick to the easy-to-grow vegetables and have fun. You know, enjoy yourself because it really is fun growing your own food.
Oh, there's no question. Everybody was wanted to be a gardener last year, and I don't think it's going to be any different this year. The seed suppliers couldn't keep up, and we're just having the best year ever, as were many of the garden centers, which is absolutely great that people wanted to get dirty and grow their own.
I love it. And, you know, I talked to seed companies last week, three of them, and they tell me they're busier this year than they were last year, which is insane because, as you know, last year there were long waits to get seed, and it was really hard to do. And I'm so happy that they're busy, just as busy or busier this year as well.
Yeah, well, one of our sponsors is Stokes Seeds, and you probably know Stokes. They're out of St. Catharines. And last year, because they are also suppliers of the commercial grower, not just the hobby home gardener, last year they had to prioritize their commercial shipments out to those growers, which delayed the hobby gardeners. So I think what happened is home gardeners got more proactive this year and started ordering earlier.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's exactly it, because the bump started in, like, November.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
I got to get my seeds. And, oh, yeah, they're busy. They are definitely busy. There's lots going on there. So what are you excited about? What are you growing that's new and exciting in your garden this year?
Oh, my gosh. I'm excited about everything. But, like, you're also probably familiar with Emma Biggs, the 15-year-old gardening superstar from Toronto. Well, she's been sending me tomato seeds and feeding my addiction. So I've got some really cool varieties from Emma I'm looking forward to growing. And one of the ones she sent me recently was called Lebanese Mountain. And it is, you know, tying it into my husband's Lebanese heritage, it is just the most wonderful slicing tomato ever. My mother-in-law, she cries almost like every time I give her one because they're so beautiful and delicious. So I'm definitely growing more of those. I've got fun things like ground cherries and cucamelons. But I'm also obsessed with cucumber melons, which, you know, we often call Armenian cucumbers. And they come from Italy and the Middle East. And they look like cucumbers, but botanically they're melons, and they are like a cucumber mild flavor, so delicious. And I just ordered some from a seed company in Ontario because I can't find them in Nova Scotia. So there's so many options out there. I would say definitely everybody should try at least one new thing every year in their gardens, just because there's such variety and so many fun flavors available.
Oh, you're right. And you're right about Emma and her tomatoes. She's a wild woman. She's got like hundreds of varieties of tomatoes on the...
I know, Steve, her dad's mad at me because every time I talk to them, which is pretty often, I keep telling them, where's the greenhouse going? And you know what? I think it's going to go in their driveway.
It's got to. There's nowhere else for it. They've got the top of the garage covered in straw bales, the driveway's full of straw bales. They're gardening everywhere at their place. They are doing a really good job using a suburban lot very, very well. There's no question.
So inspiring. Yeah, I think they're just fantastic. And Emma's only 15.
I know. She's so well-spoken. She was on our show when she was 13, when she first, the book came out that she had first written with her and her dad. And I was so impressed with how mature and, like I say, well-spoken she was on radio. She's very, very...
You know, Nikki, I'm sorry to say, the enemy for folks like us is time. And I'm looking at the clock and we're up to our next break. We have to kind of shut our conversation down, which is terrible, darn it. But once again, our special guest is Nikki Jabour. The book is called Growing Undercover, available everywhere. And it sounds like a must-buy for anybody interested in gardening.
Yeah, and this is Nikki's latest of four books. So she's got some great books out there. And follow. You can definitely check in on Nikki at Savvy Gardening, SAVVY gardening.com. And thanks a bunch, Nikki.
Guys, listen, I feel like spring is officially here now because I've talked to you. So thank you for helping
good
me kick
stuff.
Off spring today. And I wish you a wonderful season. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope your snow melts soon.
A note to Helen, who has been patiently waiting on the line as well. Connie, we're coming to you with all your questions to shoot to Charlie here on The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, let's be joined by a gal who's very patient and has been waiting on the line for so long. Helen in Toronto, good morning.
Good morning.
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 Yeah, go ahead, Helen. Hello, Helen. Oh, dear. Did we lose her?
After all that.
Oh. Oh, golly. She's still on the line, apparently. Helen, good morning. Nope. Okay. Do you know what I'm going to do? We'll switch tack here, so we'll try to reconnect. In the meantime, Frank has reached for the bell. Hey, that's a first-time caller bell for Connie calling in from Burlington. Good morning, Connie.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Morning. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm a first-time vegetable gardener this year with my friend. We just got a community plot in Burlington.
Nice.
My question is, some people up there grow their tomato plants in pots.
Mm-hmm.
Others grow them directly in the garden and put cages. Mm-hmm. Which is the best way to grow various types of tomatoes, in a pot or in the ground? And what's the difference?
Okay, good question. It depends what kind of tomato you're growing. Remember that there are tomatoes that are called indeterminate, and some are called determinate. The difference is that an indeterminate tomato would be like a beefsteak. They get very, very tall.
Yes.
They need to be staked or caged or both. And they are get so big that they often aren't happy in a pot.
Okay.
So they were the indeterminate, the big tomatoes typically are grown in the ground. And it's got to be a good quality, you know, highly organic, fertile soil for tomatoes to do well.
Mm-hmm.
In the smaller determinate tomatoes, they're the ones that'll grow to a certain height and then proceed to flower and produce fruit for the rest of the season until frost wipes them out. They can be different sizes. Some are as tiny as something called a Tiny Tim, and some get bigger than that, up to about a meter tall, with sometimes full-size tomatoes. They can quite often and easily be grown in pots. There's one called Patio, and Patio tomato was bred and selected for its ability to live in a pot on the patio. And there are good-sized tomatoes that will grow on that particular plant, but one of the challenges to growing in containers is they dry out faster than plants do in the ground. So it, depending on how far you are from the plot that you've now got your name on for your gardening, and whether you'll be able to get there daily and water if it gets really hot. Because if you've got above ground plants in containers above ground, they will likely need to be watered every single day if we get into real hot, dry, particularly hot, dry, windy summer like we did last year.
Okay, we plant beefsteak. We want to do cherry tomatoes and, mm-hmm. you know, just start slow for our first time. And
mm-hmm.
we're just wondering which way. Now, when you grow tomatoes this year, you can't plant them back in the same spot next year. Is that correct?
It's not a good idea.
Okay.
It's always a good idea to rotate. If you possibly can, then do so. And if your plot isn't big enough to truly rotate, then absolutely, you're right. You might go in ground one season and then up into containers the next season as part of your rotation.
Okay, great.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank
and have
you
a great
much
weekend.
For calling.
And thank you for checking in with us here on the Garden Show. We got a note here from Roger Smith. Says, "Hi, Charlie. I live in Elora, Ontario, and with many of my neighbors, my lawn is mostly brown midsummer. Mm. I've been researching top dressing with white Dutch clover seed. Now, there seems to be many pluses for clover over grass without planting in my part. There's quite a bit of clover coming into my lawn already. So, what's your opinion of this over grass alternative?"
Yeah, great question, Roger. Mm. I'm a huge fan of incorporating clover in with turf grasses. Here's a whole bunch of reasons why. I know some people go, no, it's a weed. Remember, what is a lawn? A lawn is a green foreground for your gardens beyond. It's the base of your palette of your garden. It's where the kids can roll and play and you know, wrestle. You can play some croquet, perhaps. Either way, a lawn is not something that, you know, needs to be, you know, anything other than a nice green flat palette. So what does clover do that turf grasses don't do? Number one, clover is a member of the legume family, and it adds nitrogen to the soil because clover, as all legumes can actually take nitrogen out of the air and change it into a form that they themselves can use. And as we know, nitrogen is an essential nutrient for all plants. So not as much fertilizer when you've got clover because they can fertilize themselves. They are drought tolerant, which is Roger's point, midsummer, lawn is dormant and brown. Clover doesn't go dormant. It stays green through the entire season. It's got a very deep taproot, and it's able to withstand drought and stay green. Because of that deep taproot, it actually will help break up compacted soils. It'll tolerate those old compacted soils, and it'll break through with that taproot, so wonderful for that. It will out-compete weeds. So when a weed tries to move in and tries to take over from your turf grasses, the clover just goes, you know, poop on you and shoulders that weed right out of the way. Clover is resistant to most of the diseases and pests that we struggle with. Chinch bugs, white grubs, some of those pests that absolutely annihilate our lawns. Those things cannot touch clover. And probably the next best thing is clover not only grows in the full sun, but it will also grow in the shade. So you really can't get much better than a lawn alternative than a wonderful white clover.
Great recommendation, Charlie Dobbin. Now, Charlie, we have to take our next break here. A word to Ken calling in from Scarborough, first-time caller. Hang tight. You're going to get that bell ring in just a couple of moments here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, Charlie, Frankie has reached for the bell, and that's for Ken calling in from Scarborough. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Charlie and Frank.
Morning.
Good morning. I have a question regarding another lawn-related question. Mm-hmm. And what it is we have a patch of crabgrass that I'm trying to control, and I've got a bag of corn gluten. Mm-hmm. And the question is when to apply it. The advice that I get seems to be wait till the temperature warms up and do it 2 weeks before it germinates and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, it can be all of it, Mike. Here's the deal.
It just doesn't tell me when the time is.
No, and your timing to ask this question is very good, Ken, so thanks for calling. The things to realize about crabgrass is that we recognize crabgrass usually late in the summer, early fall. It becomes a large plant with thousands of seeds, up to 60,000 seeds on any one plant. And they're very, very sneaky and able to send those seeds out because they grow flat on the ground and they flower right down flat. Then winter comes and that plant that you saw last fall dies in the winter. It is an annual plant and it does not survive. And so where you had crabgrass last fall will be bare earth right now. However, there's thousands of seeds out there. And so just depending on the weather, those seeds are poised and ready to go and fill in every little blank spot of soil that they can get their little roots into. So the rule of thumb when it comes to controlling those seeds from germinating, so we want to stop those crabgrass seeds from actually growing, and the corn gluten will do that for you, is wait until the forsythia is starting to turn yellow. So the forsythia are those shrubs with the flowers before the leaves early in the spring. Probably sometime in the next 2 weeks, you'll start to see some forsythia turning yellow. And that's always the rule of thumb. When we start to see yellow on the forsythia, it's time to get the corn gluten out onto the land. And remember, though, when you get that corn gluten out, you're going to stop the crabgrass seeds from germinating and growing, but you're also going to stop any seeds from growing. So you can't put out some, you know, turf grass seeds and corn gluten at the same time, because right, corn gluten is going to stop everything.
Okay. So okay, there's no way you can relate it to air temperature or soil temperature or anything like that?
No, because it's all connected and it's all, it's a process. So daytime, nighttime temperatures absolutely will impact soil temperatures in the spring, the amount of precipitation we get, will have impact, obviously, so will wind. So all that's why we use what are called phenotypical indicators for when to do certain things. So it's really hard to just say, oh, you know, on April 14th would be the right day to do that, because it might be April 14th this year and it might be March 14th next year, very much dependent on just the, how the spring is unfolding. Now, we've got a couple of really, really warm days coming and dry, and that is really going to promote the the movement of plant growth and the waking up of so many of our plants. So it's like I say, it's very likely that you're going to be out there with the corn gluten sometime within the next 2 weeks.
That's what I thought. I guess I better find a forsythius plant exactly. somewhere around here and keep an eye on it.
You have to pay attention. Or magnolia is not a bad idea. Magnolia plants are the ones with the big, huge flowers. Yeah. Those are going to start to fatten up. The buds will start to fatten up, and they'll start to crack some color right around the same time as the forsythia. So maybe in your area, there might be a magnolia.
Magnolia, okay.
Okay.
I'll keep on the lookout for it. Yeah, it's just the weather forecast for the next week shows just nice warm weather for well into the end of the week, and I'm beginning to wonder if maybe that should be about the time. So
that's right. And I mean, it's not like the corn gluten is going to go bad if you put it on too early, but it will wash away if you put it on early and we get a big rain.
Right,
so that's your fun. That's where you don't want to waste it. So you want to make sure that you are putting the corn gluten down as those little crabgrass seeds are just starting to say, ooh, time to grow.
Righto.
Okay.
Thanks for your help.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling in, Ken.
And don't be a stranger.
Yeah, exactly. You're always welcome here. I'm looking at the clock, and there's really not enough time to deal with another question.
We've pretty
well run on a racetrack here.
No kidding. Hey, let's talk. I was just listening to some of those commercials about, you know, vaccines and COVID-19.
Yes.
What's going on? Are you set up for a vaccine? Have you done it?
I am. It was not an easy task, I want to tell you. but finally got through on the line to sign up for the 75+. So there's a little secret let out of the bag. 70. I'll be 79 in May. But no, I've got an appointment for Wednesday at 9:40 at the Ray 20 Complex in Newmarket. So I'll be getting my first shot then.
Excellent. So I did the same thing, except I don't actually have an appointment yet. I'm on a waiting list to go to a drugstore in the not far from me, sort of in the Kingston area, where the drugstores are doing the 60+ group, whoever wants to get in line to get going on their vaccine. So I'm totally looking forward to that as well.
Exactly. Well, look, you have a wonderful week. We'll look forward to redoing this show all over again. Well, we'll have different callers and different questions.
We will. And actually, next week we have another special guest joining us. Mark Cullen is on the show. So, never a dull moment when it comes to the garden show, right, Frank?
You got it, honey. You take care till then, okay?
And you too. Thanks so much. Thank you, Carlos, for all your help. Couldn't do any of this without Carlos, who presses the right buttons at the right time. And, everybody enjoy this beautiful week coming. Happy spring. And we'll see you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio. The new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.